Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I get a text from the office manager and it says, "Do you want to work with some investors in San Diego?" And this is just a concept that I talk about in the book. If sometimes you just say yes to things and then figure it out later, and you don't always have to know the reason or where it's going, but for whatever reason, I said yes. I remember thinking of all these questions and just said, just figure it out. Yes. And he goes, "Okay, great. They'll be in the office on Thursday. You're going to meet with them." And I was like, oh, that escalated quickly.
On this episode of the Life Shift podcast, I'm joined by Josh Painter, who I recently connected with from the Eternal Optimist podcast that we were both guests on. Josh's story is truly inspirational. And we talked about how small decisions can lead to unbelievable opportunities if we just say yes. We also discussed the importance of choosing gratitude. Finally, we talk about the turning points in Josh's life that completely shifted his path and how he was able to build the best version ever of himself and avoid living the life that others expected of him. I've recently launched a t-shirt giveaway for members on the Life Shift Patreon page. So if you're interested in the giveaway, bonus episodes, special shoutouts, ad-free episodes, early release, all that fun stuff, please check out thelifeshiftpodcast.com/join, and it will lead you right to the Patreon page. Thank you so much for your support this far. And without further ado, here's my episode with Josh Painter. I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that have changed lives forever. Hello, my friends. Welcome to The Life Shift podcast. I am here with a new connection, Josh. Welcome to The Life Shift podcast, Josh.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We got connected from another podcast that both of us were on called The Eternal Optimist. And I had a great experience sharing my story and my journey to being grateful for those really tough moments. And after having that conversation with Matt, he was like, "Hey, you need to talk to Josh." I assume you had a pretty good experience on that as well.
Yeah, it was a great podcast. And even just the name of it, right? I find myself being an eternal optimist. So it was a good connection.
I don't know about you, but when he first asked me to be on the show, I was like, "Am I eternally optimistic? Is that like, is that a thing? Like, I don't, today I wasn't in such a great mood, so I don't know if I qualify for this." But when I listened to a few episodes, I was like, "Okay, I get it. We all have these trials and tribulations, and it's what we do with them and how we look at them as a learning experience," which your whole story is about, which I'm super excited to kind of dive into. That's how I felt about the eternal optimist.
No, touching on what you just said, you know, that's one of the things that I'm always re-remembering is that, you know, gratitude is a choice, and it's a choice that we need to make over and over again. Obviously, the more you do it, the more it becomes part of you and a habit. But starting off, yes, sometimes you need to remind yourself that everyone goes through that stuff, and remembering what's going good is a continual process.
It is. And I often talk to some of my guests about how easy it is to stay in the other part of it, to kind of just stay in that upset feeling, or why is this happening to me, or that victim mentality. It just feels more comfortable because it's easier, right? And so you're right. It's a constant reminder to yourself, but as you do it more, you're like, okay, these are serving me.
Yeah. I wonder if it's tough to stay in that spot because, you know, our brains are just programmed through evolution to spot threats and to see possible problems and possible negatives and already start to think, how do I overcome these things? Right. So I sometimes think that we're often looking for the negative, just more as a survival mechanism than anything, but it is easy to get stuck in that for sure.
I think a lot of us were conditioned, which I think is something we'll talk about, but I think a lot of us were conditioned to ask or say the question, what's the worst that could happen, to kind of ease our fears of going into something. And recently I caught myself doing it, or someone caught me and called me out, and they were like, why don't you reframe that to what's the best that could happen?
Yeah.
And that's another reminder of like, okay, you're right. We do kind of anticipate. I think we anticipate these potential things that could go wrong to make us feel better just in case they do.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought experiment. Sometimes we play worst case scenario just so that you can realize that even in the worst case scenario, it's probably overcomable. I know that's not a word, but I don't care. And then your brain starts to jog the ways that you could overcome. Okay, so what's the worst that it could be? And then you go, okay, that might not be that bad, right? But I love your take on it. Well, what's the best that could happen? You know, what's the best that could come of this?
It's a hard one to get into, but to your point, the more you do it, I think the easier those kind of things get. And the last note on this is, when I was going through therapy later in my life, after, you know, my mom died when I was 8. And so it took about 20 years to like be strong enough to kind of go through that grief process that particular time. And my therapist would be like, because I would talk about anxiety, about going and doing something that was unfamiliar. And she would say, are you going to die? And yeah, it's kind of that same point. I'm like, well, no, but, and she's like, well, if it's not going to kill you, then just do it.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of that same kind of mentality. And I think it's interesting to think about how we can be more positive and have that best version ever, which we'll speak about a little bit. Before we kind of get to like those pivotal moments where things were quite different afterwards, maybe you can kind of paint the picture of like who you are right now and then kind of what your life was like leading up to these two really significant moments in your life.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now I'm a mid-40s author / own real estate brokerages and companies and closing companies. And more than anything, I just, my love and the fun thing that I do is I get to just coach goal achievers and people that, you know, maybe they're at their turning point, approaching that turning point in life. So that's kind of, you know, my current situation. I'm also an amateur drummer on my way to becoming more than an amateur drummer. So
awesome. You said you were an author. At the time we're recording this, your book is due to come out in 5 days. But by the time this is out, your book will be out and we'll have the links and all that stuff to it. And we'll talk a little bit more about how you came to write that book. But yeah, paint the picture of like what your life was like before kind of that first trigger point.
So, you know, I told you there's kind of two turning points in it. It's hard to talk about one without the other. So if I'm painting the picture before the turning point, a mini turning point was I was 17 years old, and in my junior year of high school, my girlfriend got pregnant, and I was an active participant in that process. So forces you to grow up real quick. Then, you know, my son was born the beginning of my senior year. A few months into that, I just thought, like, I need to get out of here. And I just went and asked what's the fastest way I can graduate. You know, I'm not going to drop out or anything. And it's hilarious. It was like, oh, just come talk to this teacher once a week. And it was like a book report here and there. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but I had enough credits that I just needed like one or two classes. And it was like, here, this class, just come every once in a while. So I finished like in a few months, but in the meantime, I just, you know, started living this life that you think that you're expected to do, right? It just feels like, oh, I have a child now. The expectation is you get married. The expectation is get a full-time job with benefits, right? Doesn't there's no like following your dreams. It's more like survival mode. So I did all that. And then it's like, oh, I got to rent an apartment. I got to get credit cards and just be a consumer and just live this life that you, it's so funny. Cause like someone challenged me on this the other day of like, well, did others expect that of you? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it's just, I thought that others expected it of me. So
I think society also kind of taught us, we're around the same age. And I feel like growing up, that was just, it was like a predetermined checklist that we had in our life. And, you know, you were thrown a little bit of a wrench in your experience, right? But for a lot of us and a lot of the people I talked to on the show, it was very much you graduate high school and then you either go get a full-time job or you go to college, not necessarily finding your dream or your passion, but rather what's going to make you money.
Yeah.
Because I guess that's the most important. And then you get married and then you have kids. And then, so yeah, I don't think anyone ever actually told us that. I think it was just an expectation that we all kind of just put on ourselves.
Yeah. 100%. And so I, you know, I lived that life for the next 12 years till I was 30. So in between that, right, because I got to backtrack into my early 20s, you know, I did various jobs. And then my aunt, who worked at the sheriff's department, told me, oh, hey, they're hiring for jail guards. And I mean, I'm 21 years old. I have no idea what this means. It's just I knew it was a full-time job. I knew there were benefits. I knew there were some perks. And it just sounded interesting, right? So I did that at age 21. And I did it for 5 years. And I just remember thinking, working in a jail for 5 years feels like you're in jail. This was in San Diego, where I still live. So it feels like you're in jail because the shifts are 12 and a half hours at a time. And so I remember like in the winter, waking up at 4:30 a.m. to get to work, you know, start at 6 a.m. Sun's not out. And then you're in this building for 12 and a half hours. And then you get off at 6:30 p.m. The sun's not out anymore. And I just remember like 5-6 days in a row of this, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time, but now I'm like, oh, my circadian rhythm was just all whacked. And then to add to that, it's 3 months of day shift. And then you switch to 3 months of night shift. So then it's 6 p.m. to 6:30 a.m., right? And you're just doing 3 months. And then, you know, I mean, food is free, right? This jail food. It's not as bad as everyone thinks. It's like fast food, right? It's not horrible, but you're just eating that because it's free and it's, you know, nighttime or breakfast time.
And you're also around potentially people that are not great influences.
So that's another thing I was going to touch on is like, you know, after, so I did 5 years of that. It felt like I was in jail. I was like, I can't do this anymore. One thing that I always say and that I take is like, if I'm looking at the bright side is, there's a certain level of communication that you learn when you're talking to 1,000 criminals every day and you know, your goal is just to not get your ass kicked, right? Just go home every day, you know. They're in there for their reasons. You're in there for your reasons, right? So it's like, that it was a skill that I learned where, but anyway, so fast forward 5 years, I'm like, I got to get out of here, right? At that time, real estate seemed to be doing very, very well. It was 2005.
We know what comes after that.
Yeah, everyone does. So I get into mortgage loans and I'm doing okay. And I do well enough that I feel like, okay, I can quit this job and I leave that job. Then 2007 comes. I just didn't have enough like experience or runway to sustain through this crash. And I remember a period in 2007 where just nothing was selling. No one was buying. No one was selling. And so I went back, you know, got a full-time job for a little while, for like 6 months. But I kept like pursuing the real estate mortgage thing. And then I remember 2008. It started to come back, but you know, I just missed my gigantic turning point, right? So 2007, can't pay my bills anymore, file for bankruptcy. One of those bills that I can't pay is my mortgage. So I lose my house. And then in early 2008, I complete what I call the trifecta of bad credit and get a divorce, end the 12-year relationship that, was an expectation. I move into a two-bedroom apartment that was $600 a month, which sounds absurd right now in California. So each of my kids could have their own room at least while they were with me, and then I just sleep on the couch. And I did that for a good year. But, I got behind on rent, got behind on bills again, because I was now on my own and still trying to do the whole real estate thing.
I was going to ask, when you're in that moment, because we're conditioned that, like, you're just supposed to do these things, were you hustling to try to make things happen? Or were you kind of weirdly comfortable in that discomfort?
No, I was hustling. Desperation, right? So,
because I think there's something to be said. I think there's a lot of people that when they get in that situation, like we were talking about earlier, it's like a woe is me. How do I get out of this? And some people will either go balls to the wall, or they'll just kind of get in this cocoon of some sort of like, I'm just existing. I'm just, kind of barely doing what I need to do. But I guess you had the two kids too. So, or you had multiple kids, I should say.
Yeah. Two kids, which was a huge motivation. Right. I went balls to the wall. 2008. I'm behind on my rent, behind on my bills, still plugging away at mortgage. By then I had quit the full-time job. I remember just doing good enough to think like, okay, I can just go full-time back into real estate. So I'm doing a loan for a guy, and it's a $75,000 loan. He's buying a $150,000 investment property and putting 50% down. It's taking forever for this loan to close, and months, because the bank is just not signing paperwork and all this good stuff. They don't know what's going on. End of the day, I close this loan. I think I made $400 on a loan because it's based on the loan amount. I called the real estate agent to congratulate her. She says, oh, thanks. And then she's just quiet. And I'm like, isn't this exciting? We've been working on this for months. And she's like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't really a big deal for me. I think I only made like $4,000 on this little deal. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. So I already had my real estate license. That day I decided I'm on the wrong side of this, right? I want that whole like, oh, this isn't really a big deal. It's $4,000 part of it. So I just drove to a real estate office. And I said, how do I sign up? And they were like, just okay, here you go. Here's the paperwork. The next day I went, I bought a bunch of generic open house signs. All they said was bank owned open house. That's it. I found a foreclosure in our office that was empty. I put up my signs everywhere and just camped out in the house. And about 40 people came through that day on a weekday. And turns out it was luck. It was right by a school and everyone was waiting for their kids to get out. So 40 people come through, one person writes an offer on this house. Now the offer didn't get accepted, but I remember thinking, dude, if I just do this every single day, 8 hours a day, like there's no way I'm not going to sell a house. So that proved to be true, man. And during this time, I was like down to my last $60 in the bank. And so I did something that I now affectionately call debit card roulette, where I went to the gas station. I put $60 of gas into my truck because I needed to go show houses. And then I raced to the ATM and I withdrew the $60 before that gas charge went through, because at that point, you just don't care about insufficient fees and all that good stuff, right? You can't take something that's not there. So I grabbed my last $60. So now I got $60 in gas and $60 cash.
It's a good idea. I'm going to go try it.
Yeah. And I just, I just remember like, so at that point I was like, all right, I'm going to borrow a little bit of money from my parents. So I borrowed some money, but just kept at it with the open houses, posting online, door-to-door stuff, right? And so, within a few months, I had sold like three or four houses and really just caught up on everything.
Did you feel like you were in the right space when you closed a couple of those?
Yeah, it felt good.
Because you were getting a value versus that $400 that you made on that 3 month, 4 month, however many month deal it took to close.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about your story too is that trifecta is huge, but really, do you feel like that phone call was like that fire, you know, when you talk to that real estate agent and she was like, you just wasted your time, basically. It was like, you made $400 in a period of months, and I don't even care about this $4,000 I just made.
Yeah, that was the fire. It's one of the things I talk about in the book is like, seeing someone else do something is really all the evidence that you need that it can be done, right? Just like the four-minute mile. So as soon as I saw that it could be done, I was like, why not me?
Was that on your radar before? Like, was that something that you were considering doing, or were you always just kind of on that mortgage side and that was where you felt you wanted to be?
Interestingly enough, I got into the mortgage because my ex-wife was on the real estate side. And so it seemed like it would make sense if she did one and I did this. But so one of the things of doing mortgages is I got all my business from real estate agents. And so I was all day, I would see what works. You know, I would get all these different perspectives. And every single time I was like, I could do that. I could do that, you know? And so once I completed the trifecta, it was like, why not do that? You know? And so, yeah, that phone call was all the motivation I needed.
Right. Imagine if you had just like sent an email that day and she just was like, cool, thanks. Yeah. You know, and not, who knows where you would be. You know, I was, I'm still struck a little bit by, you know, earlier in our conversation when you mentioned, you know, you had the kid at 18 and like, so you needed to do the things to just exist and check the boxes, if you will. Did you have dreams before that? Like, were you dreaming of being something, or were you always prescribed to the, I'm just going to get a job and have a family?
I think it's maybe a little of both. I think, you know, where I grew up, a rougher area, you were happy to get a job, right? And you were happy to provide and really do what you could to get out of there. So it's hard to, I mean, quite honestly, man, it's hard to remember having dreams, you know, wanted to be a rock star. Did I play an instrument? Not really, you know? So that it's like, I wanted to be a baseball player, but that got cut short, you know, in high school. So yeah, who knows?
Yeah. I asked that a little bit because, and I feel like if I look back to my high school years, so late 90s, I'm thinking I wanted to be a VJ on MTV. I knew in my mind it wasn't really going to be something. I knew I had to go to college, and I did do radio television for one semester and then quit that as soon as I got my first C, because I was like, what? I'm not a C student. I can't possibly, this is not for me. And so I moved into business just because I was like, well, that's what I'm supposed to do. And so now, as this 40-something-year-old, I look at the current generation who seemingly feel compelled to follow their dreams and seemingly have dreams. And it might not be what we were conditioned to think we should do, which so gives me hope. It's nice to see that younger people have these dreams, but also have avenues and the support to do it. So that's kind of where that question came from.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've noticed that too. It's crazy. They all have huge dreams.
Do your kids dream?
Yes, you know, they're in their early 20s, so they're still figuring things out. I'm playing that fine balance between trying to tell them what they should do, what I think they should do, which is, again, expectations, right? So it's always this balance. I don't put any expectations on them, but yet I try to guide them to figuring out what they want to do. So I think they're still figuring it out.
Well, and there's another example of how things have changed too. I mean, early 20s, they're still exploring, whereas our generation was very much like, you got to have it figured out at 22.
Yeah.
You're out in the real world, or you, 18, you're out in the real world. You have to figure this out. And, you know, looking back at your journey, I bet a lot of that was really helpful to go through. Would you say that, you know, that experience in working in the jail, like, serves you now?
Yeah, my son did 5 years in the Navy, and I think that was kind of his figuring it out, part of figuring it out, right? And I remember asking him like recently in the car, so what's your next move? And he made a comment, something to the effect of like, I don't know, I don't want to make the wrong decision. And so then that brought up to me of like, dude, there's no wrong decisions, you know, like it would be easy for me to say that 5 years in a jail was like the wrong decision, right? But no, it's like, well, every single thing that you do leads you to where you're supposed to be, and you gain all these, you just gain valuable skills, even if you don't see it in the time, valuable knowledge, friendships, right? I'm still friends with
things
some
you
people.
Don't want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like things that like, oh, I definitely don't want to do this for the rest of my life. And that's good knowledge, right? That's solid. I teach college age because they're all ages, but people that are getting bachelor's degrees now, and a lot of them are like, I don't have it all figured out yet. I'm like, congrats. You know, like, I don't think any of us really do, and nor should we. We kind of should be taking this journey of exploration. And I love that you said early on, like a thought experiment, just that term. We've been using it a lot in some of our classes related to personal branding, and that, like, have that thought experiment. Think about what it could be, what it could lead you to. And so, yes, to your point about your son saying that he doesn't want to make the wrong decision, I think we've all felt that.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, them saying I haven't figured it all out yet just reminds me of this quote that I'm totally going to butcher, but maybe you'll help me, but it's the one, it says like, flee from the man who thinks he knows everything and run to the man who knows he knows nothing, or something like that. Right. That's what it reminded me of. Like, I don't ever want to feel like I've got it all figured out, you know, then that's like, you've got nothing left to learn.
Well, that too. And just knowing that other people are going to bring perspectives, ideas, things that you maybe have never considered, doesn't necessarily mean that you're the smartest person, they're the smartest person, but like, we're all having this collective experience. Mm-hmm. And if we're just siloed, like, what is that experience, right? Like, we should be learning from each other. We should, to your story of the real estate agent on the phone, like, had you not had that conversation, maybe it would have taken you longer to jump into this space. Maybe you would have just kept pushing these mortgages and doing those things. So it's good to be curious. And to our earlier point, it's good to just try things and not be afraid of the worst that could happen, but rather, like, what's the best that could happen?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And I like to remind myself that, you know, 10 years ago, I might have thought I had certain things figured out, and then you realize, oh no, I didn't know anything. And so I'm trying to remind myself that the 10 years from now version of me is probably going to laugh at me today, right? So I'm trying to, like, beat that version to the whole laughing part and just laugh now and be like, all right, you might think you have some things figured out, but this is just what you've learned so far.
It's important to know. I think it takes a good set of awareness, or an ability to have that awareness of yourself, to be able to look back and critically think about those moments and the decisions that you made, and whether they served you in a positive way or a negative way. They may have served you positively just as a collective, right? Because you now know, never doing that again, or I need to do that again. I forgot that version of me. I want to bring it back. So I think that's a good perspective, of to just, like, know that, like, right now, the 10-year future version of us might laugh at the things that we're doing and saying. So you started selling some of those houses. You were kind of finding your footing. Where did that take you?
So that took me to, you know, fast forward maybe like 6-9 months of doing that. And so one part that I left out of the story, not on purpose, but I had borrowed $10,000 from my parents to try to hold on to this house. So, I mean, fast forward 9 months later, it's Mother's Day. I give my mom a check for $12,000. That was the $10,000 that I'd borrowed for the house, plus an extra two that I had done during the debit card roulette days of just being like, I just need a little bit more, just a little sustain. And so that, I mean, that was like a full circle, right? So then a month or two after that, it would have been 2 months after that, I get a text from the office manager and it says, do you want to work with some investors in San Diego? And this is just a concept that I talk about in the book. If sometimes you just say yes to things and then figure it out later, and you don't always have to know the reason or where it's going. But for whatever reason, I said yes. I remember thinking of all these questions and just said, just figure it out. Yes. And he goes, okay, great. They'll be in the office on Thursday. You're going to meet with them. And I was like, oh, that escalated quickly. So I meet them in the office and they go, oh, you know, we want to like flip some homes and we want to get into this. And you could tell they just hadn't done it before, but you know, they wanted a real estate agent that could help them through the process, help them get the homes rehabbed. And they even said, if someone could bid for them at the auction, that'd be great too. So I just go through this whole spiel of like, oh yeah, I can help with that. And we got these relationships with banks and contractors, and I could probably even find someone to bid at the auction for you. And so, and they said, you know, if we could just do one or two a month, that'd be great. We'd love to do 12 to 24 a year. So, all right, cool. So then I go through this thing and they say, well, okay, why don't you send us a proposal tonight? And I was like, okay. And I just remember thinking like, didn't I just propose everything? This is crazy. So I go home and I get on Google and I search proposal template. I download this Word doc that I still have from 2009. And I just go through everything that I'm proposing to them just based on this outline. And so I send it to them. And then all weekend goes by and I don't hear anything. And then they call me and they go, hey, we bought a house. Can you meet us tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. with the contractor that you always work with?
Oh, no.
So I call a bunch of people I know. Yeah. I call a bunch of people I know. And I'm like, I need a contractor. And so Greg's name came up twice. So I call Greg and I go, hey, man. I don't know what this is. Might be an opportunity. Just meet me at this house at 8:30 before they get there. We'll bro out for a while and just like, we know each other. Okay. We work together.
We work together all the time.
All the time. How many houses have we done together? 11. Okay. Yeah. That's the number. All right. So we walk them through the whole house and then they go, all right, well, we'll let you know. And then, I mean, I got in my car and my phone rang and they said, hey, send us a listing agreement. So ended up listing, selling that home. Ended up selling over 300 homes for them in a span of 3-4 years.
Wow.
And another investor heard about what I was doing with them and ended up selling over 60 for him. So altogether, this one text that I said yes to turned into 400 sales. And I mean, at the height of it, I think I was managing like 60 homes at a time for them, you know, and I'm just going to throw out rough numbers, like 20 were being renovated, 20 were on the market, and 20 were like pending in escrow. I had 8 people that their only job was to drive around and check these houses the night before they went to auction. I had 2 people that would go bid at the auction. I had 3 assistants. One of them's full-time job was to put lock boxes on, take lock boxes off, and just check on the houses. So yeah, that whole thing, that yes, changed my entire life that first year that I was in real estate.
Were you regularly a person that was, yes, I'll figure it out later? Or was this a weird moment?
I don't think it was a weird moment, but it's hard. It's, yeah, I'm at a loss to try to think of previous opportunities that ended that way or that, you know, I mean, that was like the first yes where I was like, wow, this turned into something.
Were you fearful like throughout the process as you're like kind of creating it? Or did you feel like you had enough wherewithal to like put it together and really feel confident in it? Or
I felt like I had enough. I was very confident in like my abilities to figure things out and innovate and learn on the job. So if anything I was fearful about is that they would figure me out during that process.
Did they ever hear the beginning?
No. I don't think they did.
Send it to him.
Yeah, man, if I mail him this book.
That's amazing, though. I mean, I just released an episode in November where the whole concept of her conversation was the power of yes in things that she didn't really know that she knew how to do. And I think that's a good takeaway from this conversation, too, is that, you know, if you have enough knowledge under you, now, if you weren't in the real estate business and someone came to you, you might not have said yes so quickly, right? If you didn't have some of that knowledge. But if you're in that space and people are offering opportunities and it scares you a little bit, I think a yes can often lead to really cool things.
Yeah. I've heard different stories of people saying yes to that and then nothing comes of it, right? I mean, I often think they had interviewed another real estate agent. So I always think, man, what if they had gone with that other person? What if that person had a better pitch?
Something you did. It was that Word document that you downloaded from Google.
I actually do think it was. It was very professional. And then, and sometimes I think about my manager at the time who texted me and said, do you want to meet with these investors? What if he had just met with them and never texted me?
Right. Or picked someone else.
Yeah. He ended up getting fired like a year later. Yeah.
Did you hire him?
No. Yeah.
Send him a book.
Yeah. And I think the only reason he even reached out to me is because I was borrowing his lockbox key to show houses in San Diego. I think that's the only connection that I've ever been able to draw is like, it must've been in his mind. Oh, San Diego. They weren't even buying in San Diego. They were buying in the county just north that we were in at the time. So
it's so interesting to look back and see like these little tiny connections and just you saying, yeah, I'll do it. And then kind of following through and in a professional way and not shrinking back because you didn't have that direct experience, but you had the real estate experience and you had the knowledge of the mortgage industry. So you had probably a lot, that side probably also helped, you know, and just convincing them that you know what you're doing in the industry. But it's super cool. 400 houses in how many years?
Must have been like 09 to 12. I remember one year I sold 165 to them. Yeah. Helped them buy and sell. So
are you still in the real estate space?
As a brokerage and escrow owner, yeah. I mean, occasionally I'll list and sell for friends and family, but it's not my primary thing.
So what did you move on from? Like, when did you start transitioning into the next phase of your life?
So before I tell the story, I got to rewind back to 2008 again, because at this point, it must have been 2014. So 2008, I'm just starting in real estate, you know, done those open houses. I've got an offer on a listing from an agent that's in my office. So I walk into his office to present this offer. And I say, hey, man, I've got an offer on your listing. And he looks at me and goes, will you email it like it says in the MLS? Like, I'm like, this guy. So he asks me to email this offer to him, even though I'm holding it in his office. So that stuck with me. So fast forward years, right? Now it's 2014. And I get the most random text from him that says, hey, man, like, I don't know, probably said, how are you doing? We should grab coffee sometime and catch up. And my first instinct is like, no, we shouldn't, right? You're an asshole. And I still don't know why I did it, but I said, yes, all right, let's have coffee, which is so crazy, man. Cause like, I mean, you know, I'm sure anyone listening to this is familiar with the butterfly effect and how one little decision, you know, a butterfly's wings can cause like a hurricane or whatever, tornado. You know, just saying yes and going to coffee like changed my entire life. I could probably tie back to why I'm on this podcast right now and talking to you and why people are listening. I sit down with him and he just starts talking about like real estate teams and building teams are the future, right? And just tells me like, oh, I should check into these guys that are teaching it, right? So I noticed that they're having an event in Dallas. I fly to this event in Dallas. One of the speakers was Hal Elrod, who talks about Miracle Morning. Check out that book if you haven't. It's a great book. At the end of the event, I see him checking out of the hotel. He's got a name tag on. He lives in the same city that I do, which is not a big city at all. I don't say anything to him because he's checking out. I don't want to bother him. But when I get home, I send him a message on Facebook and I go, hey, we live in the same city if you ever want to grab lunch. he says, "What's your phone number?" Which is still to this day the weirdest reply I've ever gotten. So he calls me and he says, "Hey, I'm doing this event in San Diego in a few months. You should come." My instinct was like, "No, I don't want to. I'm all evented out for the year. It's in your events in December. I don't want to." But I said, "Yes." Again, I go. So I didn't even want to go to the event the day of. I was like trying to think of reasons not to go, but I said, "Okay, let's do this." I drive to the event. First few hours are just totally weird. It's like people high-fiving and hugging and dancing, right? I'm an introvert. I was like, what have I gotten myself into? So we go to lunch. I think about leaving. Like, I'm like, man, if I drive home, I can still salvage the rest of my Saturday. But for whatever reason, I go back. The next person that speaks is John Broman. He does an, he does this amazing presentation, speech, keynote. I become friends with John. I become friends with Hal. This leads to like other best friendships. This leads to connections. You know, Scott Groves, I ended up sitting across the table from him the next day. We became great friends. He introduced me to Matt. Matt introduced me to you, right? And so I think it's fun, you know, just a thought experiment, right? I always ask people, like, how many decisions back can you go to where like you can connect why I'm talking to you right now or why we're doing whatever we're doing right now?
It's crazy. So that connection led to what? That coffee with an asshole.
That led to me building a team, a real estate team, you know, recruiting just bartenders and CrossFit babysitters. I mean, just anybody like I saw like a little spark in and thought, oh, there's more for life, more to life for them. So, I mean, I ended up building a team of like 50 agents. At some point during that, we reached over $1 billion in sales, top 10 in California. Fast forward to the pandemic, ended up selling that brokerage and that team during the pandemic. Yeah.
Wow. While it was still booming.
Yeah. During that interesting time where everyone wasn't sure if it was going to boom, but it did.
Yeah. I sold a house 4 weeks before the pandemic and I was like, had I just known.
Me too. And the only reason I wasn't disappointed is because I also bought one during that time. Same. So yeah.
Yeah. And I got a really good mortgage rate. So I feel, right. I feel good about that.
Sure.
Yeah. I love the idea of the butterfly effect and the fact that you brought it up. Cause that's, I mean, really is the reason I have this podcast and kind of like trying to figure out that one thing or those little things that seem innocuous at the time, like, mm-hmm. you know, a phone call that you had or a text message that you had, or just saying yes to something that like, why did you even say yes? Like pinning it to these moments and like kind of dissecting that. I love the idea of it because I don't think that a lot of people take enough time to like sit down and look back at how all those connections made. And I love that you made like that long connection to why you're sitting here right now. It's so interesting to me.
I love doing it.
Yeah. And a lot of people just don't do it. I've actually had some guests where, you know, I send just a small form and I ask, like, what do you want to talk about? You know, like, what is that pivotal moment? And usually people give me a sentence or two. And I've had a few instances now where people will get on to start recording and they'll be like, so I've been doing a lot of thinking. And I really like, and doing what you said, kind of that, how far back can I go? And they're like, I think I'd like to change what I'm talking about today. Because, you know, maybe it isn't, you know, maybe your moments aren't necessarily those bigger moments, but yeah. Rather those little tiny ones where you just said yes, or someone was like, you only made $400. That's not what you should be doing, you know, and lighting that fire to where you are now, you know, putting out this book. What drove you to, what's the butterfly effect to write that book?
Oh, you're asking me. It's crazy because I was just thinking while you were saying that. So I do this event it's actually a perfect segue now that I think about it. So I've been doing like this goal planning, visioning workshop every year. And just even sitting here, I was like, oh, that would be a great exercise of like, why are you here? Okay, but what decision before that, you know, and then what came before that? That would actually be a great exercise to add. And I was trying to figure out how to fit that in. But anyway, so during this whole evolution, I would say 2014, 15, when I went to that very first Dallas event, I started going to different events and just kind of getting interested in, you know, becoming the best version of myself. That was a great plug, becoming my best version ever. But in my journey, you know, I would go to different events and I would find like, it seemed like they all had some things in common, at least the ones I was going to, is like, they'd have some keynote speakers and then, you know, it was a great speech. And then they're selling stuff in the back of the room. And so I found myself leaving these events and I'd have a journal full of some notes, but inevitably it would just get thrown on a shelf and maybe never reviewed ever again. And so I got this idea of like designing the event that I would want to go to, where I would actually, instead of like taking inspirational notes, I would actually make a plan. And then I thought it would be great if at the event, the first action was taken before the event was even over. Like you took actual action right then and there. So it started in my living room with 15 people. I thought it went pretty well. Everyone loved it. You know, good, great conversations, goal setting, taking action. It really didn't hit me until months later. People were like, oh, I'm still doing this. Like I've accomplished this. I bought my first house. I lost some weight, right? And then so every year I would just add a little more to it and have a few more people. But last year was the first year that I ever like opened it to the public of like people I didn't know. And I mean, I did zero marketing for this other than a Facebook post. And 53 people showed up and got great feedback. And the number one thing that I heard from the feedback was, hey, I loved that we did this. It would be great to know why we do these things. You know, why does this work? So, I mean, that was all the inspiration I needed to write the book about why these things that we do at the event work. So, and the event was called Best Version Ever. It's about becoming your best version ever. And the idea that, you know, you get to decide what that looks like. It's not any kind of set thing. It's just your life's purpose is to become the best version of yourself. And you always get to decide what that looks like. And so, you know, the book just kind of goes into way more detail that can't always be covered in a one-day workshop.
So you also work with people to, like high achievers, you said, kind of setting goals and whatnot. And so I think there's a lot of people that are very into coaches and goal setting and those things, life coaches, all sorts of things, right? What do you say to people that have skepticism about coaching or those kind of things? I was actually having a conversation with someone earlier today about kind of how he feels that there's so many more coaches, at least publicly, that we can see now. I don't know, maybe it's always been this way, but what do you say to someone that's kind of like on that fence or a little skeptical about it?
I mean, I just point to examples, right? Like the most successful people in the world have someone that they're learning from, right? Maybe you just change it from coach to mentor, right? I mean, take a football team, right? They've got a head coach. You've got, the best rock bands in the world, right? They're learning from, you know, they learned from someone. You're learning from someone. So anything I've ever done, you know, part of that process is who's doing this at a higher level than I am and who can I learn from? I mean, there's a whole chapter in my book about immersion and just, you know, I like to use drums as an example because it was at the time, it seemed like this crazy goal that I was in my late 30s and I just thought, oh man, when I was a kid, I picked up guitar, but I put it down pretty quick, right? Learned a few chords, but never did like the hard work, the boring stuff. I never did the boring stuff that takes you to the next level, right? The practicing that sounds like crap, that's really hard. And that's what the actual part that takes you to the next level. So when I was in my late 30s, I decided like, all right, I'm going to learn drums and, you know, just based on the anecdotal 10,000 hour rule. I know it's anecdotal. It's not real research, but the idea is if you put 10,000 hours into something, you're going to be an expert. if you're not an expert, you're going to be really, really, really good at it. And I just decided, like, I'm going to put 10,000 hours into drumming. If it takes me 10 years, that's fine. I will be a really, really great drummer in my 50s. I don't care. It's going to be fun. And during that process, I was like, how do I immerse myself into this, right? Like, who is doing this at a high level that I can learn from? I went to two camps. I went to Ireland and I went to Canada, and I spent a whole week in both countries, all day long drums. I hired a teacher, right? Teach me drums, teach me things that I don't know. I joined a band where you just get thrown in and you learn how to do these things. So that's my long-winded answer of, like, you know, are there too many coaches or what's, is there skepticism towards it? I just think, like, if someone's doing something or has figured out something that you want to go to at that next level, then hire them. I've hired the most ridiculous, it sounds ridiculous. All right, so I played softball, right? Adult, underhand, slow pitch softball. Our team needed a pitcher. I wanted to pitch underhand, right? Because that's what the league is. But I didn't want to walk people and I didn't want to suck at it. So I hired this guy to teach me how to pitch in old man softball. My friends make fun of me sometimes about it, but I'm like, yeah, but I learned a lot and I got pretty good in like a really short amount of time. So I think where the coaching comes in is like compressing that learning time.
As you were talking about that, I thought of two things that spoke up. One is that, do we think that, again, back to the society expectations, do you think that that plays into why some people choose not to seek out help because of the fear that someone will now think they don't know enough or they don't know what they should know? You know, especially like a life coach, like, I should know what my steps are. I should know what my goals are, right? Like if we're talking in this mindset. So I wonder, do you think that that's kind of a barrier as well?
Yeah. And in addition to that, I just think, like, it takes a certain level of vulnerability to admit that you could, that could be helpful. Right. And so, you know, vulnerability is not comfortable. It's uncomfortable. Right.
Well, there's a fear too. Now, if I hire someone, and I think you can relate it to therapy in a way too, in other ways to kind of get through trauma or whatever that may be, you have to be ready for it. You have to be ready to do the hard work. And if you're not ready for it, coaching's not going to work. Therapy's not going to work. None of that's going to work. So yes, to that awareness of, like, just where am I and at what point in my life, where am I in my life and what am I going to do next? Do I need help with it?
Yeah, I would say you can always take it to the next level.
Yeah, and it goes to your point about, like, always knowing that you don't know everything.
Yeah, I was going to say you can always find someone that's doing it at a level higher than you. And oftentimes it's those few steps and the accountability.
It's so cool to hear your story because it starts out as, I think, probably a common story for a lot of people that, you know, you're in high school or you're close to, you know, you're out of high school, you're close to that age, and now you're having a kid. And now life expects you to do these things and you can get stuck in that cycle of just getting, whether it's the next promotion or it's another job or a bigger house or a different car, you know, like whatever that was. And to hear your story about how when, you know, down in the hard parts of your life, when opportunity knocked, you said yes. And it kind of, look where you are now, helping other people to say yes to maybe their fears or the things they didn't think they could do.
Yeah. One of the inspirations for me was, you know, Bonnie Raitt's book, The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. So she, you know, she was a hospice nurse and she saw a lot of people passing away at an older age. And the number one regret that she heard time and time again was, I wished I'd lived a life true to myself and not the life that others expected of me. And so, you know, I really latched onto that and thought, that is not going to be a regret that I have.
Yeah, one of my life shifts is kind of related to that. You know, I said that my mom died when I was younger and it took me forever to grieve her. But in that period of time, I got really close to my grandmother, and very close. And she became like another mother to me. And then when she got sick and she got lung cancer, and we were in her hospice room, and I want to say one of the last things she said, like a last coherent type sentence, was very similar to that. It was, "I wish I hadn't worried so much, because all that matters is love in the end," which kind of told me, like, just do the things that serve you and serve your heart and serve the people around you, and stop worrying about the what ifs and the worst case and all these other pieces. And I feel like at that moment, mid-30s, is kind of when I just started leaning into whatever I felt like doing, I was going to do.
Yeah. I love that, man.
It's sad that we have to like get to these moments and someone to remind us, but then there's people like you that are helping others push through that before it's quote unquote too late, which it's never too late unless you're dying, right? So, you know, kudos to you what you're doing for other people, kind of helping, probably helps you as well, right? It serves you to help these other people.
Yeah. You know, the last chapter of my book is called Becoming. And without, you know, ruining it, it's the idea that once you've become your best version ever and achieved things, the way that you get to the next level is by turning that around and helping others, right? Once you get to the top, you need to send the elevator back down for others and help them. And that's where the true like fulfillment comes in, right? Watching others and helping others.
I relate to that so much. Just in this podcast, you know, the impetus of it was I felt so alone in that journey that I was going through after my mom died that I didn't want other people to feel alone. And so I wanted to come share my story and have other people share their stories so that, you know, something you say might light them up. And it might be the smallest of things. It might not even be a huge part of your story, but something you say might resonate. And then they're like, someone else has gone through it. Someone else has faced this. So I appreciate you sharing your story. I do like to end these calls with a question. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if this version of Josh, if you had the opportunity to talk to Josh when he found out that his girlfriend was pregnant and when things were probably swirling in your head at that time, is there anything that you could tell that version of you that you would want to?
I would tell that version of me, everything's going to be okay. But I wouldn't give that person any advice whatsoever, because I don't want that to affect his decisions and all the things that led me here. You know, I have no regrets because every single decision, you know, shaped who I am today, and I love who I am today. So I would give zero advice and just say, don't worry, everything's going to be okay.
I love that. I also love that it's such a common response to that question. It just shows me that we as humans have a lot more in common than anything else, despite the fact that we live such different lives. Right? At the end of the day, we are a product of the things that we've done and the things that have been done to us.
Yeah.
And if we can find a way to grow from that and to be grateful for the really hard moments. I often think the hard moments are really what turn us into the good people that we are. So I appreciate that answer. I also appreciate you just being a part of this.
Thanks, man. It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. And so we will link everyone to your book, which will be out by this point. And so check that out and reach out to Josh. We'll give you all the contact information so that they can have some coffee with you, and maybe it will change your mind about coffee with assholes. But anyway, so thank you for being a part of this. And if you are listening to this and you're interested in giving me a review or a rating, I would greatly appreciate it. And until next week, we will see you then. Take care. For more information, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.